Okay, so I'm looking at my list of notes that I took for this episode, and I'm trying to figure out, like, what, if I could only tell you one thing, if I could only tell one person one thing that I learned from the Jocko Podcast 13, what would that be? Before I get into that, if you don't mind, Rob, I want to read about from the Wikipedia page of the Chechen-Russian conflict. And there's just two things that blew my mind. And the first one, it says it's describing what, you know, what is the Chechen-Russian conflict? And it says it's the centuries-long conflict between the Russian, formerly Soviet government, and various Chechen nationalist and Islamist forces. This is the part that blew my mind. Formal hostilities date back to 1785, though the elements of the conflict can be traced back considerably further. So Jocko's podcast is about what's happening in the 1990s. And then to know that formal hostilities were started 200 years before that, and then they could even be traced back even further. And then the second thing I want to tell you, in case you didn't know, is they have a summary of casualties on the Wikipedia page. And so they're saying, hey, you know, exact casualties is going to be hard to ascertain because there's lack of records when you're fighting over hundreds of years, right?
Yeah.
And so it says one source indicates that at least 60,000 Chechens were killed in the first and second Chechen War in the 90s and 2000s alone, which, based on what Jocko was telling us, is not surprising. But higher estimates of these two wars range up to 150,000 to 160,000 killed. So in any case, lots of people are dying just from this minor little conflict. I shouldn't say minor. You know, just from this one war out of, you know, hundreds that have happened in the last few centuries. So do you want to start with, do you know what, like, your one thing that you learned from the podcast would be? Or do you want me to go? Like, how do you want to do this?
If you seem all revved up, go ahead.
actually, if you don't mind, why don't you go first? Because I still don't know what that one thing is going to be yet.
All right, so you think about that, and I'm going to talk a little bit about the morality of this war, and how, like, brutal the Chechens got with the prisoners of war. So if you haven't listened to the Jocko podcast, the Chechens would line their defense points with Russian, like, injured or possibly dead. Like, from the Russian perspective, they had no idea. So to attack that vector, they literally had to shoot through their own people. And hell of a tactic. Got it handed to the Chechens. And they talk a little bit about the morality down the stretch, on how, like, they were already kind of beaten up. Like, the soldiers and commanders of the Russian army didn't even want to be in this war. And morality was way, way, way below anything for a proper unit.
To your point, though, they would hang them upside down. Could you imagine? I mean, if you're dead, you're obviously not feeling that. But the idea that they took some of your potentially friends captive, they're injured, they have most likely what's going to turn out to be fatal wounds, hanging them upside down, and to penetrate the Chechen forces, you have to shoot through your own friends.
Just crazy.
And they were talking about the same, during the same point of that podcast. I'm really glad you went there, because I want to tie it into something we talked about last week too.
Really?
Before I do that, they talked about the Russian prisoner, what Chechens like to do is they would decapitate Russian prisoners, and then they'd place their heads on stakes beside the road leading into the city. And I love that Jocko pointed out, like, listen, throughout history, there's countless examples of humans are obsessed with decapitating other humans, right, in war. Like, how many times have we heard these examples? Like, you can't even count. I don't understand what it is about human nature. They like to count. So they like to cut off heads, and they always like to mutilate genitalia. They were talking about how snipers, the Chechen snipers, would shoot directly for the ball, for the guy's
right in the dick.
Yeah, for the guy's penis. So not only were they going to bleed to death, but it was like, I don't know if they used the word embarrassing, but this, you know what I thought of? This, I'm going off on a tangent, but I thought of, I read I think his name is Siddhara Mukherjee. He's a oncologist. And an author, but he won the Pulitzer Prize for The Emperor of All Maladies because he does a lot of cancer research. Well, I just read or I'm not even finished with it yet, but I've read parts of his book called, I think it's called The Gene. And something that was most fascinating in that book, he does a complete analysis of like the human genome. And he talks about there's no such thing as intrinsically human DNA, that all DNA, living DNA, is just evolutions of one single source, right?
So wait, hold on. I got to pause you. So you're saying, what do you mean by intrinsically human?
Like there's no, like the same genes that we
have. Inherently human?
Yeah, I'm sorry. That's the word I was looking for. Okay. I didn't mean intrinsically. Thank you for correcting me. And so what I thought of when I heard the part about the decapitation and then shooting off the penis is what chimpanzees do, because you know those along with the bonobos, we share something anywhere from like 96% to 98% of our genetics with them, and anytime they attack one another, or a human for that matter, they rip out your eyes, your nose, so they go for the face, and then they rip off your balls and your penis. And so the reason I wanted to tie this all back is because last week we had a discussion, you and I, about like you brought up the fact that the German army in World War II had a lot more worse reputation for brutality because of the Holocaust and everything else. But you could make the argument that the Japanese were just as brutal because, you know, there's stories about them decapitating, cutting off they decapitate you, put your head on your chest, and then cut off your penis. Hopefully it was in this order. Maybe they cut off your penis while you're still alive, and then put it in the mouth. And so that just made me think of like, that's happening 60 years ago. There's obviously examples going back to, you know, centuries before of human behavior like that. But what's amazing is like that's still taking place, like to echo what Jocko's sentiments was, this is in the 90s. Like we had the internet and this kind of behavior is still going on. Like, do you ever stop to think about that?
Well, not with the internet part, but I just think that there's nothing but a cycle of violence when it comes to all living things. Like what's something that lives in peace on the planet that doesn't really have to like worry?
Yeah, it doesn't exist, right?
I don't think
nothing.
I don't think anything can't like exist on this planet and not be a part of the food chain or not. You can be touched. All right.
You just said something that's really good though. It's just cycles. So what we're seeing by looking at different, we're looking at combat situations, military history that's separated not only through hundreds or thousands of years, but by geography as well. So it's. From that, you can deduce the fact that the people that are engaged in these different conflicts spread throughout history and geography don't know each other, and they don't know of each other, you know, like we do now. And yet you see the same behavior. That goes back to what I was trying to explain last week, why I feel like our humans' default tribalistic tendencies to say, hey, my group is good, this group is bad. And it's like a fundamental misunderstanding that most of our behavior is biological. And how do you know that? It's driven by our genetics because that example, like these people didn't know that, like they're separated by time and distance, and yet they're still exhibiting the same behavior. So that leads you to believe that they're just, it's instinctual, you know?
Well, how many generations is it going to take to kind of evolutionarily cut off our tribal tail? If you will, like,
is that even possible?
I don't know. I mean, assuming, yeah, like, bit by bit each generation, but yet again, we'll always have these pockets of humanity spread across the globe, and I think globalization is like a 100% global community is very tough because we have that evolutionary point, and tribalism made sense back in our human early days, but
it was essential for survival, right?
Yeah.
The ancestors that had that tribalistic tendencies are the ones that survived long enough to reproduce, and so to your point. I hate to reference Bob Hoffman on every single one of these, but we're going to get to that podcast. I think it's podcast like 22 or something in there.
Yeah.
And he says this something that stuck in my mind for years. And it's like, don't waste your time. Like at the time he's writing these words in the 1930s, he's like, don't waste your time listening to the radio. All you hear is all you're hearing is troubles of others. And I'm like, oh my God, what is the modern internet? We're not meant as a species to know about a bombing that happened, you know, 1,500 miles or 5,000 miles away and think, like, the internet is like the troubles of others supercharged to the point where like I'm like, hey, maybe I should just focus on podcasts where I learn something from and books and really try to withdraw spending my time. You know, I've talked about at length, my favorite network is Twitter because it's an information network and I'm in, like, I like information. But I don't think it's a good idea. It's one of the, it goes back to like one of Nassim Taleb's best ideas, and it's really controversial if you talk about it. Like I hesitate to talk about it with people that are not familiar with his work, but I don't watch the news and I try to avoid like current events as much as possible. And people think that's like heresy, like you're not somehow informed. I'm like, you don't understand how much noise you're getting for every little bit of signal that you're getting.
No, I completely agree. And I get shit every election cycle for like for that same thing. But you know, as the practicing stoic in me, my civil duty is to be informed and kind of move forward as a member of the community, right? So it's difficult. But like news itself alone, isolated, like just the morning news it's useless. It's useless to me except for weather and traffic. That's all I want. I could care less about anything else that happens. Like it really is 99% noise. Like what has news or anything of the sort ever just like come on and like changed your life or that didn't?
Very, very rarely, if at all.
It's very rare. And there's people that watch news like 100 hours a week. You know, it's just on perpetually. Like,
well, I used to be a news and political junkie, and then it took honestly the writings of Nassim Taleb to convince me. I'm like, wait a minute, that is good. If I'm analyzing how much information I'm taking in to how much of that information is actually useful, it was staggering, and that's when I kind of made the switch.
So is that Taleb's idea? I don't think you explained what the idea was, or was that your realization?
Well, no, he explicitly says it. He talks about it in The Bed of Procrustes, but I think it's from his book Fooled by Randomness, where he's talking about if you want to, like, he was using it in the, like, the, because he was a quant and an investor. That's how he made most of his money, by making money out of money options is what it's called. But he talks about how people would check their portfolio every day. And the more frequency that you're checking, like you think the information that you're checking, you're increasing the frequency of access to information, and the end result is you're making worse decisions, right? Which is counterintuitive because people are saying the more information I have, the better decisions. And so he proves in the book why that's a fallacy, and then he applies it to other things. Like, you know, because it starts out with his learnings in the financial markets, and then it broadens into a philosophy for life, right? And now it's kind of culminated in the book The Skin in the Game, which is really a book about ethics
and daily life.
So in The Bed of Procrustes, one of the aphorisms is, if you want to cure yourself of reading or being addicted to news or whatever word he uses, he goes, just spend a day reading last year's newspapers. And what he's proving to you is, if you were able to pick up a newspaper, let's say from October or November 2017, and you read it today, more than a year later, you're going to realize 99.99% of the stuff in the newspaper was useless. It came and went. It was noise. It's not benefiting your life at all because the news cycle, you know, is perpetual. You just said something, though, I want to bring up, because you used the word stoicism, and I've been reading a lot about that lately. We've talked about it. And I'm looking for the thread because it has to do with Jocko. So first of all, I had to look up, even though I've read a couple books, I was like, let's get the actual definition of stoicism. And it says, the endurance of pain or hardship without a display of feelings and without complaints.
But that's the modern day. That's like definition number one.
Yeah, that's according to dictionary.com. But there was a... Jocko tweeted out something the other day that I thought was interesting, and it was somebody. Let me look for it. Hold on one second. Sorry.
But while you look for it, like you can't really argue that Jocko is not like a modern day Marcus Aurelius in a lot of ways.
Wait, explain your thinking behind that.
Just because like he's kind of although Jocko was never a general or an emperor, he's kind of like a enlightened soldier. So he has a point of view that most people don't have. And I don't think a lot of soldiers have, at least not the guys that I know. Usually, I don't know. I'm gonna steer away.
He arrived. The way I would describe what you're saying, I think. Tell me if I'm understanding you correctly. He has his own form of stoicism, except he didn't like. We're arriving at stoicism based on like the writings of Marcus Aurelius and all these other guys. He developed it through his own life experience. But he wind up at the same conclusion. So to your point, there was a thread. He was joking. He quote tweeted it and he said, "This thread hurt my feelings." And it's this,
yeah, I saw it, that.
You saw this?
Yeah, I saw it.
Okay, so it says somebody. Person by the name of Erica said, "I really respect Jocko Willick and all he does, but I really disagree with him when he says that how people are feeling doesn't matter. He says the man has tens of thousands of people following him. Majority of them are men, and he's telling them that they have to ignore how they feel to reach success. That's not accurate.
That's not what he
But you know what that breeds? Pent-up aggression and anger and depression and anxiety." And then one of the worst statements, I hate this term. "Toxic masculinity is real, and it makes me sad to know what so many people will take heart what he says." And what I loved of is people jumped in the thread, and they're like, you're misunderstanding it. He's not saying that your feelings don't matter. He's saying that, like, what is stoicism? It's the endurance of pain or hardship without a display of feelings and without complaint. And so somebody responded. He goes, "I think you're misreading the message a little. He's saying that you need to ignore. He's saying that you need to ignore your feelings and complete the task at hand, then process the feelings later in a more appropriate environment, whatever that might be.
It's called,
don't let. I'm sorry.
Isn't that called fatalism?
Well, then that's kind of like a subtopic within Stoicism. But it says, don't let feelings damage the mission. Stoicism 101. And like, that's the complete misunderstanding of to me what Jocko has taught me. It's like, yeah, your feelings are for something for you to deal with. When people say your feelings don't matter, it means your feelings don't matter to other people. If you have a fundamental understanding of human nature, like we're selfish. And so you might be able to care about a handful of other humans' feelings, but certainly not some stranger on the internet. Like that's just not how humans interact with one another. So
yeah.
what Jocko's speaking to, and why I think his message resonates with so many people, is because we've been inundated with, hey, I'm upset about something, therefore you need to change your behavior to conform to so I don't feel bad. And like,
yeah.
that's not a message that's going to ever win.
That's not just something that's ever going to evolve out of social media. That just seems like that's the way it is. Like, I believe this way, everybody else should believe the same thing. And it's driving us more to the edges rather than closer to the center on understanding. Like,
well, he made a good point. I watched him on, he did this sit down. And I'm not into politics, so I don't follow. There's this guy that's a political commentator. He's been on like Joe Rogan's name's Ben Shapiro. So
yeah.
I don't watch any of their stuff. I have no I'm not interested in politics at all. But Jocko made a point because Ben Shapiro's like, "I feel like we're more divided than ever," you know, and he's all like, not depressed, but he's all like almost fatalistic about it, to use your word. And Jocko's like, but he didn't say it. He was like, essentially, his response was like, "That's bullshit," without saying bullshit. He's like, "Listen," he's like, "you think that way because you're obsessed with politics and you deal with this stuff all day." He goes, "I travel all over the country dealing with businesses. 95% of the country, they don't think the way you do. They're worried about taking care of their kids, going to work, doing whatever it is they're doing. They're not fighting with strangers on the internet over politics." And that's, again, that echoes, I hate to use the word, but like the intolerant minority wins. That's another idea from Skin in the Game, the book The Skin in the Game, where people don't understand that, you know, a very dedicated intolerant minority can change how an entire society adapts just because of they're so relentless.
Yeah, and I love Nassim. I love his you remember his example for that where you use the why Mountain Dew
was it the kosher?
Mountain Dew is kosher.
Yeah.
He's just like, how many Orthodox Jewish patrons do you think drink Mountain Dew? It's not many. it's like less than 1% of all people that consume the product, but yet the Parv or the Circle K is on there.
It's just easier to make everything kosher so they don't have to deal with that
yeah.
That's the smaller minority.
But the,
hey, so
the,
oh, go ahead. No, go ahead.
Wow, that's I knew this. This is what happens when you're not face to face. You always have the dual go aheads. But anyway,
well, you win this one. You go ahead.
I tapped you out. So if you use a medium like Shapiro, that that highlights people of opposite, like that's what I think social media doesn't. It just highlights who's not like us. Like I've never found like a community, you know, through any of those mediums that I could like get involved. Well, yeah, I'm lying, but I'm just saying I found more people that are not like me than I've found people that are kind of like me in the same ideology. Well, I don't want to use that word, but like-mindedness rather. It just seems like a lot of people use it to find like what they don't like.
Listen, I'm obsessed with the internet, but I really am pessimistic when it comes to social media. I can't describe why. Like,
no, you're right. Have you read I just read this book called a few months ago called Everybody Lies.
No. What's it about?
It's basically about everybody lies. Like the happiest people, the most depressed people are the ones that are posting on their social media, like, hey, look how happy I am, like shit like that. But then, you know, you kind of have like a Robin Williams type of thing. It's like, oh, this guy is so happy, but no, he's not. He's got.
Oh, so they're projecting what they want to be true, but what isn't actually true.
And the moral of the book was great. It's like, you don't listen to, and this is coming from a big data scientist, you don't listen to anybody's social media if you want to get to know them. You don't. It's just, you're just getting false projections. You go to their Google searches.
Oh my goodness.
And then it just goes into how like you can go into big data because Google just it's anonymous, but your Google searches are now like kind of distributed almost. Like you can see like which county likes which state likes this type of porn and stuff like that. Like it was just really weird like how they could see and kind of predict a lot of elections by using big data and only Google searches, because that's the only thing honest. Because A, you're by yourself, there's nobody that's going to influence you, because there is a bias in when you do like personal surveys or anything, can like phone surveys, or they're just also because there's somebody involved in that you will alter your opinion because there's another person. But with a Google search, you're by yourself, your thoughts are free from any outside whatsoever, so you're more honest. And I don't know, I found that very very refreshing book to read, because it's kind of like you see these things with social media and you're like, that there's something there. And then you read a book about like, you know, the big data behind it, you're like, oh, okay, now it's more of a pixelated picture. It was interesting. I recommend it. It's by can't remember his name, but the book is called Everybody Lies.
Well, so just hearing you that reminds me of this economic principle, which if in your example, social media versus your private Google searches. So social media would be your stated preference and your private Google searches would be your revealed preference. And you see this, there's a lot of discontinuity between what people say is important to them and then what their actions actually reveal is important to them. And that the closer, the smaller that gap is, hypothetically, the more like you're in line with who your true self is. And it's the wider the gap, usually the more unhappiness you have. So I guess we're almost done with this podcast, and we had such an interesting discussion. I haven't said what my, yeah, well, no, well, we, t- well, so you said your main, one point, right? And then we went off on these tangents, which was really interesting to me. But my main point, it was funny because I took notes of what your main point was. I did think that was interesting how they used, you know, they would hang Russian soldiers upside down.
I want to clarify. My point really is that cruelty and demoralization is a military strategy that's probably the least talked about it, but the most effective.
Well, that's a really succinct way to put it. I found it very interesting, the parallels between like how you could have an entire army that's based on conventional warfare, and then you try to shoehorn that conventional warfare army into an urban environment and everything falls apart.
Yeah, that was
so Jocko too. Was talking about that being like a 360 when he was in Iraq, it was like a 360 degree battle. You're You can go every one step, and you can fight up, and then you can even fight down. Like,
it's also multi-dimensional too.
Yeah, he called it subterranean because there's basements. So to that point, what I took away from the listening to the podcast is something I never thought about. And what would happen in an environment like that? And he said there was entire, now talking about the Chechens and Russians fighting in the 90s, entire battles were fought through floors, ceilings, and walls without visual contact.
Yeah, they would occupy the same building, man.
Yes, and as you can imagine, if you don't have visual contact, what was the result? They call it fratricide, which is also another name for it as blue on blue, which basically means that a lot of people were killed by their own army because they could never maintain visual contact. So somebody starts shooting through a wall, what are you going to do? You're going to shoot back. Well, sometimes you find out the people you're shooting back through were your own guys. And that blew my mind to even think about the fact that entire battles were fought in the same building, never being in the same room.
Isn't that nuts? That was another point that I wanted to talk about. And that was a big problem for the Russians and a huge advantage for the Chechens. And I think the Russians had communication problems because they didn't talk to their armored trucks. They didn't talk to any of the heavies. They definitely didn't talk to anybody doing airstrikes because they were getting bombed all day. And that just led to more demoralization.
The Chechen strategy for dealing with airstrikes, they called it hugging. They would get so close to the Russian troops that if they drop bombs, basically you're going to kill us. That's fine, but we're going to take out a bunch. You're going to be killing a bunch of real soldiers. Yeah,
you're coming with us.
It was really fascinating. And then one other thing, and we can just end on this, is what you talked about earlier. I think you used the word cycles, but the repetition, human nature, history doesn't repeat, human nature does.
It's a constant.
And it was talking about, Echo asked Jocko, because they were talking about the propaganda, how Chechens were so successful spreading propaganda. And so Echo was asking Jocko, he's like, in your experience, does that happen here, meaning present day America? Meaning the media mischaracterizing war and what happens incorrectly. And Jocko's like, oh yeah, it definitely happens here. The way the media portrays things is very wrong. And he saw that through his own, he was comparing, the example he uses comparing it when his time in Iraq. And that just goes back to my whole thing where it's just like human nature's constant. It's just the names and nationalities and countries and time periods change. But the idea that the media could ever get anything, or humans in general, media is just a reflection of humanity in a sense, that we're ever going to get it correct. And it's not going to be full of bias or like you're sampled through your own experience. It's just not accurate. The example I always use a lot of times with my friends in social settings will bring up, oh my God, I can't believe that, you know, Russians try to influence American election. And I'm just like, you've never read any history? Because literally every single election throughout history has always been influenced by other third parties, whether that be corporations, groups of people, religions, countries. Look at the own American history of all throughout Latin America of manipulating elections. This, I cannot believe that there's people alive today. They're like, can you believe this happened? My response would be, I would be more surprised if it didn't happen. Of course, that's why I spend so much time, and I think us going on this journey of using Jocko's podcast as a military history course, because history is so informing about how to interact with people and what you can expect from them. Because like we say over and over again, it's just the same decisions, the same mistakes happening over and over again. And if you study that and you learn about it, then when it appears in your own life, you're like, oh, okay, yeah, that sucks that it's happening, but it's not surprising.
Yeah. No, it shouldn't be. It shouldn't be surprising anybody. This has always been, since the beginning of democracy, there's always been that third party. I like the way how you put it. Corporations have been the biggest offender for a while that we forgot, hey, other countries with, with global ambitions can also.
Well, I just read The Banana King. It's the life of Samuel Zamuri. I'd recommend the book if you guys haven't listened to it. It's really poor immigrant from, I think, Russia. I can't even remember now. It's been a few weeks. came to America with nothing, starts out peddling rotting bananas on the side of the road, winds up building the and taking over the largest banana company in the world, then winds up himself funding military coups for some of the countries where he's trying to grow bananas. It's just a crazy story. If you want to listen to that, or Jocko's books, or the book that Rob just recommended, which was what, Everybody Lies?
Everybody Lies.
We'll leave a link in the show notes. You can get two free books if you try out Audible. Even if you don't continue with an Audible subscription, those two free books are yours to keep. I'd recommend Discipline Equals Freedom, because that, or not, Extreme Ownership rather. It's actually narrated by Jocko and Leif. If you somehow listening to this and haven't read or listened to the book, it's amazing. I think he sold millions of copies by now, because it's still on the best-selling list, and that book's been out for like 3 years. And then if not, I would recommend the Banana King, and then Rob's recommendation is Everybody Lies. And if you want to know more about what we were talking about philosophically earlier, try Skin in the Game or Fooled by Randomness by Nassim Taleb. Both of those are on Audible. Both of them are amazing. And if you want to learn more about entrepreneurship, I have another podcast. It's called Founders. I'll leave a link below. Shameless plug. It's very similar to Jocko's, though not as good. And instead of talking about military history, we're talking about the early days of founding companies and the history of entrepreneurship, really. But yeah, so anyways, we'll be back next week, and we're covering Jocko 14. Is that next week, right? Yeah, all right, Jocko 14.
We didn't talk about shaving this. That was a repeat. Repeat.
Yeah, that pops up. We'll start maybe we'll start next week's podcast on that, because I think that's an interesting segue. And every time I hear them talk about how you lose discipline when you don't shave, I think of you now. I chuckle to myself. All right, man. I'll talk to you later.
Later.